Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. I am your host, T'Trunk. It's been a few weeks, guys. I'm sure you've missed my... I don't think it's too arrogant to say dulcet tones. Do you, Sebastian Stafford-Blaw?
No, I was going to say dulcet tones. No,
Is there another way it could come? You're a word nonce, to put it nicely. Is there another way? It's like everyone says dulcet tones now. It's one of those kind of... you know, commonly used parlances that's just tossed around because people think it makes them sound smart, hence why I'm using it. But is there, you know, what else could you say? Like, I quite like gravel tones, but it's not really like a synonym of
I've heard buttery tones.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice and, yeah, I've heard that before, smooth and buttery.
I like
and,
anything that's buttery.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I think in that case, rather than sort of like, you know, the literal appeal of something buttery, it's more of a sort of smooth, sort of kind of malleable tone. Just bounces up and down seamlessly, easy. Yeah, very nice. You do have a nice voice, which is, I suppose, what this this opening minute, another red hot minute from the Rule the Roost podcast. That I think
quite obviously. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, our other colleague of dulcet tone, Mr. Raj Baines, is no longer with us. That sounds a bit too grim.
Sounds like he's died.
I know
he hasn't died. Raj
he hasn't died, and he hasn't left the pod. So that was just a ridiculous.
No, he's insight. Still with us. He's unwell. If you think about sort of how abrasive Raj's diction tends to be, like generally. His voice, we're told, is now several octaves lower. I imagine he also probably gets a little bit northern when ill. You know, just gets a bit more...
bit more curmudgeonly.
Yeah, yeah. So probably for the best that he's resting up today.
No, I do quite want to hear, like, his best Barry White, though. I would like to hear that.
Yorkshire Barry White.
Yeah. Come on, baby. If you're lucky, we're going to do it twice tonight.
You do a good Raj. That's excellent.
As you can see, but he'll never concede that.
Sounds fucking nothing like me.
Yeah. So it's been a pretty eventful week in the land of Tottenham Hotspur. Let's start on, before we sort of go into Man United, let's very quickly go into the Europa League stuff. We've drawn KAA Ghent, who I think, were they Belgian champions the year before last? I think they turned over Valencia in the Champions League last year.
They did, yeah.
Their chairman has described drawing Spurs as a wet dream. And they're very excited about playing in Wembley as well, which is probably something we've neglected when we consider us not performing at Wembley. Is there perhaps, like, even with the Champions League teams, do you think other teams playing a showpiece game in a stadium like Wembley sees them up their game at all? Maybe something to think about in that.
You know, Jack, I don't think I buy this. I fully believe that sort of players that are drawn against us in the Champions League and now the Europa League, I'm sure they greatly look forward to playing at Wembley, especially those who, you know, aren't quite good enough to represent their countries and have no chance of, you know, playing an international game there. But I do you remember what it was like when you played football and you would occasionally, you might get to play at a nice ground.
Yeah, I remember I got picked last, usually was in goal, you know.
But it's a genuine point because you look forward to it and, you know, you're on the coach there or, you know, you're in the dressing room, whatever. When you actually get onto the pitch, it's just another game of football. You know, you still have to run, you still have to do all the normal stuff. And I just think it's been overstated. And I also think, rather unhelpfully, it's been allowed to become a little bit of an excuse for some of our players. You know, sort of now, I mean, when we lost to Monaco, it was because, you know, they were inspired by the surroundings. When we lost to Leverkusen, again, ditto. Whereas in reality, we played shit in both games. And I don't remember, I thought Monaco was smart and I thought Leverkusen were actually far better in Germany than they were in England, personally. Far more impressive, certainly in that second half. I just think it's become a kind of, it's been sort of the default reasoning.
We've picked at personnel before, playing staff-wise.
Yeah.
How much of the blame for our Champions League campaign do you think does rest with Pochettino? Because I'm a big fan of Pochettino. But I also, in the interest of balance, I think it's only fair that we should criticise him where we see fit. And I personally, I'm not overly convinced by his management of the Champions League campaign, to be honest. And quite a lot of it does rest with him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm still a little bit angry about the team that was put out in Monaco. I didn't like that at all.
It really fucked me off. Like, really fucked me off.
Agree with it. No, I thought we were struggling anyway. We were going through a bit of a period of not particularly good form. I thought that in that situation, had we managed to get through that, imagine maybe what champion. I know it's unlikely, and I'm not saying that sort of winning against Monaco would have guaranteed us a place in the knockout stages. But I think it would have given us a real shot in the arm. You know, because it might have restored a little bit of a swagger to our team. You know, Champions League knockout side, you know, we're pretty good. Whereas we were humiliated in Europe. We were made to look very, very poor. And I thought also, what was interesting about that Monaco game is the performance was obviously bad. The team selection we've mentioned, but I thought, I think also maybe the nature of the team selection allowed something pretty negative to fester in the attitude. You know, I certainly, the nature of Monaco's second goal and, you know, how quickly it came after our equaliser. These little things that you don't associate with a Pochettino team. And I think they're actually kind of, they're really symptoms of some kind of, I don't want to use a term like mismanagement because that's a bit severe, but it's at least a symptom of something not being quite right in the preparation or, you know, the right focus not being there. And it annoyed me for a whole...
I think one of the things I'm finding quite hard to reconcile at the moment, and I'm not blaming Pochettino for this, I'm not blaming Levy for this, because ultimately, you know, I'm as informed as the next bloke on the street is, really.
Mm-hmm.
But just from my perspective, from where I am now and from what information I have available to me, there is something quite bizarre about the mentality at Spurs at the moment for me, whereby we bring players into this project, as much as I hate using that term, I can't really think of another way to vocalise it, on this kind of basis that, look, you know you're not going to get top whack wages here. You know we're always going to struggle to compete for the league against the likes of Chelsea, City, United, even Liverpool. Notice I didn't say Arsenal there. On this kind of basis that, you know, but what we are going to do is we're going to play with a lot of heart. We're going to be a good team. We're going to be a focused team. We're going to blah, 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 all this Friday night lights shit. But when we turn up to something like the Champions League, you know, games that players like fucking Kyle Walker want to play in, you know, and they don't get the chance to play in that, because what? Because we can solidify fucking, try and solidify fifth place in the league, fourth place in the league. What's the motivation for these guys? You know, I just don't really get it, mate. Like, I don't really get what our end game is. You know, because if we do just want to churn out fifth place finishes every single year, then fucking let players like Harry Kane go off and, you know, actually try and succeed somewhere else and bring in just, you know, you can bring in a perfectly serviceable forward. You can bring in someone like fucking Charlie Austin or something that's going to score enough goals to see us, you know, at least get some. I don't know. Charlie Austin's a poor example. I don't want people to get fucking tied up in me saying we should sign Charlie Austin.
Because
that's not my point at all. But it's like,
He said it.
I think we're kind of getting into, I mean, I know there's no place for morals in football, but I think morally, I think we try to peddle this myth of righteousness a lot over your likes of City, over your likes of Chelsea. But, you know, what are we doing other than securing our place in this kind of second band of the Premier League, making enough money to keep whatever the coffers looking pretty, managing to exert our dominance in the transfer league over the teams below us in the food chain, which is, yeah, all natural, but then kind of still moaning about, oh, Chelsea spend more than us, oh, isn't it unfair? Well, but that's it. We could spend more, but we don't, you know, and we're more than happy to see ours poaching players from Southampton, from Ajax, from whoever else. I've got a bit of love for Ajax at the moment because I'm playing with them on Master League. I don't really know what point I'm trying to make here, to be honest, as ever. Just that I just feel like we're in a weird state of flux as a club again. It doesn't really feel like, it just feels a bit directionless, mate. That's it. It's like the direction is this. We've got the stadium on the horizon, but there's always something on the horizon for us.
I'm getting very bored of being told to look at the horizon.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly.
I've been looking at the horizon for 2 decades, Jack, and I it doesn't matter how. And look, before anyone sort of, anytime someone says something like this, yeah, there's always, yeah, there's a clever guy at the back of the class who raises his hand, goes, yes, but you know. Financial implications, this, and you know, spending capacity, that, and everyone understands that because it's been written about so much that you can't fail to understand it. The point is that at some point there has to be the sense of competition has to prevail, because this is a sport and we are supporters, and there has to be something to aspire to rather than just kind of this. It's not a slow death, because that is hugely melodramatic. It's just a kind of a constant future gazing, to the point where it never seems at Tottenham, it never seems to be about the present ever. And look, if in 5 years' time the new stadium has changed all that, then I'll happily take that all back. But I'm very jaded.
Well, do you know what it is, mate? Like, if you look at the closest things, should we say, to title challenges, is last season, and probably I think it's 11-12, where, you know, Defoe missing that fucking goal line chance at the Etihad, so on and so forth. These kind of two seasons, these show me that when we've gotten into these positions, this has been pretty much a happy accident, in that really the intention isn't for us to be up there, because if it were, when we've had the momentum like we've had at the tail end of last season,
when we have a plan to then
kick on,
if the intention was, I think what's caused my sort of morale slump in the last few weeks is that last season was wonderful. It was one of the happiest of my life, and I the memories I have from it, you know, in the grounds and stuff, I'll remember them forever. However, it felt as if within 2 months of that season finishing, It almost feels like that never happened now.
Yeah.
Because Pochettino did a wonderful job, and some of the individual performances within that team were you know, unexpected, but also, you know, wonderful, marvelous, overperformance. But it was as if, it's as if, this isn't going to turn into Levy bashing, but it's as if it was like, well, that was great. Now try to do it again from the same starting point. And I just think that is that. No, I can handle the things like the wage disparities in the league, and I can handle the disadvantage that we're at against, you know, yeah, Chelsea's and Arsenal's and whatever else. But what I hate is the idea that you just, no, we're just going to be this plucky little guy that has a bit of a swing every now and again. We're not going to, you know, the boxer that knocks someone out with a lucky punch and then thinks, well, maybe I'll do that again one day. They don't go back to the gym. They don't go, well, maybe I can improve my footwork and my technique and, you know, maybe I can lift a few more weights, whatever. We don't do that stuff. We don't have this, we don't have a strategy for the next level. We get up there and we just fall back down. And we, before we started recording, we were talking about the Redknapp Champions League era. I'm not sure it's cancelled, mini era. And the failure to capitalize on that, because all we really got out of that was a cut price Van der Vaart, wonderful player, loved watching him play, of course, and some memories. We didn't take anything else. We didn't take any sort of any advantage which could be turned into something long term. And now it just feels like it's happened again. I mean, we all understand that there are restrictions forced by the new stadium and the financial obligations to it, but there was obviously money to spend this summer. And, you know, in Kodu and Wanyama, there were fairly cheap deals, and, you know, I like both of those transfers. But then the kind of the, oh, but we can't afford to spend anything argument falls flat when I don't even want to say his name. You break your transfer record for that. I mean, you know, that just antagonized me. It was a lurching, well, we've sat on our ass for the entire summer. This is what's left. So we're going to do it. And it is just, you had the chance to do something, not necessarily division changing. We cannot go out and spend 150 million quid like Man United, but we had a chance to do something and we didn't. We fucked it again. It's a sort of, it's like a very expensive version of Soha and Nelson. It's annoyed me. And it's just convinced me. Look, a couple of good results, I'm as fickle as the next person. A couple of good results and I'll be beaming again. All smiles, etc. But for the moment, I just think we're back exactly where we were.
Which is all right. You know, it's just, do you know what it is, though? I think it's annoying, but it is. It's like a readjustment period again, isn't it? Because you kind of you can't help, just naturally your expectations, your focus gets fixed elsewhere. It's like, okay, we're challenging for the title this season. Next season, I want to challenge for the title again, and it's kind of the bump back to earth again of like, no, it, you know, for all the talk last year of, oh, it's not just a freak season. Yeah, it
was,
kind of was, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. It wasn't. It didn't rely on us that season. I mean, we were great, and no one should take anything away from the performances. But it did also rely on a lot of strange underperformance elsewhere, and a lot of teams, a lot of bigger teams, being easier to beat than they might otherwise have been. And you know, I mean, look, within 6 months we were back exactly where we are. Look at the table, for goodness sake, exactly like it always has been. It's the big teams that can buy the big players at the top of it, everybody else beneath them. And that's fine. That is a reality of football. I think I could have taken us being where we are if the circumstances have been slightly different. And I think it's completely legitimate to be grateful for things like the stability in our club and the fact that we don't have a Mike Ashley character at the top of it. And also that, look, listen, you know, we are a competitive team and we are sort of a fifth, sixth, seventh place side. And you know, all things considered, that's pretty great. But I don't think that invalidates, you know, concerns about...
Well, it does, though, mate, when, like... I'm not disagreeing with you. It's just, it's exacerbated by the fact that, okay, right, if this is our place in the world, a fifth, sixth, seventh team, fucking give a cup a go then. Like, stop throwing cups, you know? Give us something.
Have a bit of a go at the League Cup, or, you know, the League Cup win is one of my favourite memories. The second one more than the first one in my lifetime, but I'm not quite sure why. It's just... Have a go, and I, you know, in the back of my mind, Jack, as well. The Champions League failure is compounded by my assumption that, okay, we might we'll probably get past Ghent, you know, no disrespect intended, but you can just, you know exactly, I feel like I've seen this story before. I feel like the first team we play who is any good will knock us out, because we'll do something silly, like we'll have a, you know, we'll have Swansea away on a Sunday and someone go, let's win this,
we'll move up to fourth place.
Yeah, that'd be good. And then maybe Champions League. And I think, you know, let's start Darren Wimmer in at centre back, and we'll concede a shit goal that means we go out on away goals or something like that. And I just think, oh God, I need some aspiration beyond just stasis. And it doesn't matter how beneficial the stasis is, and you know, in relative terms, how impressive it looks. And I'm bored of the kind of the emotionless evaluation, the kind of the distancing from sort of more traditional supporter more traditional outlook, in that, you know, football is about winning, and it's about, you know, it's about lifting silverware, and it's about
the game is about glory. Sebastian,
game doesn't feel like it's about glory with us anymore. Game feels like it's about
this
future that never arrives, man. I mean, I'm kind of low about
it's
it.
An interesting parable for life, though, that, mate. You know, just in general.
No, mate, I'm not in a secure enough emotional place for you to do that. I spent all I don't know why, and I was in a terrible mood yesterday for no apparent reason, and probably because I watched the entire Man United Spurs game back, I'm in recovery, but I'm not.
Let's talk about that, mate. Just quickly, okay. Let's give it 5 minutes on Man United. Probably not going to say much more than anyone else has said. I've seen my entire life as going to Old Trafford and losing, and I can take it. It's fine. I don't expect us to go to Old Trafford and win. But the team we have at the moment versus the way they've been performing of late, I would at least have expected us to make more of a game of it. And I just don't really feel like we ever showed up. What bothers me massively at the moment, and I spoke to you about this before we started recording, and whatever, people aren't going to agree with me. But when's that ever stopped me, eh, renegade?
Exactly. Wild.
Our lack of focus, clear kind of direction in the final third is really starting to worry me. Like, there's no cohesion there at all. And I even feel that this was prevalent against Swansea. And I know it sounds ridiculous to say of a 5-0 victory, but looking back at even that game, and I haven't done the pod for a few weeks, hence why I'm harping back to that now. But I feel that was one of the, just that completely masked, that scoreline completely masked the nature of that performance, and also just this we've turned the corner shit that kind of came after that. It basically took a dodgy penalty for us to break the deadlock against Swansea, who we didn't really look like bothering up until that point. This is a dirge Swansea side. And then it took an absolutely speculative finish from Sun. I don't feel the second goal was a product of particularly good play from us. It was a kind of 1 in 10, 1 in even 20, 30 type goal from Sun to score. And then after that point, Swansea just gave up. None of our goals after that point were particularly well made or brilliant. Eriksen's was a fucking joke. Harry Kane's was just kind of a bit of a, you know, defensive error on their part.
Eriksen's second was full. They didn't want to be there anymore, did they? Really?
I don't feel that, you know, we were that great. And yeah, okay, it's great that, you know, we can capitalize on a team not playing well and put 5 past them. Of course, that's great. But
always nice.
But
yeah,
great. That Swansea, what, you know, didn't do it against Chelsea. And we did play all right against Chelsea, but, you know, could have been better, really.
Didn't play well enough against Chelsea.
Didn't play well against Man United. And there's a lot of lads out there who they're not turning in the sort of performances that they should be, really, if they have these aspirations of, you know, you've got Christian Eriksen, who I have a hell of a lot of time for, and I've spoken about at length, great length on this podcast throughout the years.
And in private, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, about how highly I rate him. But he's fucking, he's phoning in performances at the moment. He really is, you know? Like, we can criticise Son, like, you know, for just showing up against small teams. But Eriksen, great. You've shown up against Swansea, mate. Big deal. Like, you've agitated for a fucking contract all summer, and this is the way you're repaying the club at the moment, with these sort of abject, half-assed performances, safe passes. Like, I don't know, mate. I realise this pod is probably very, very negative at the moment. But I
think it's legitimate, mate. It's genuine. Like, I mean, I think if we were being negative for the sake of provoking a reaction, that's fine. But this is an extension of the conversation you and I have been having for an hour, you know, before we started doing this. So
there are lots of, okay, for some balance, there are lots of positives. Don't get me wrong. We are a very young, very talented side. We are competing against teams that are far beyond our means. And I fully realize that. Like, we're actually, you know, we are competing with them to a degree. It may not be that we're punching for the league, but we're still going to be there or thereabouts for the top four at the end of the
season.
We're
a good football team. I'm kind of bored of prefacing everything that we say with this kind of, well, we should be grateful. Fuck that. We're not talking to like a collective football audience full of clubs that have, you know, real issues and, you know, can't afford to pay for the corner flags every Saturday. That's a given. We know this. I think we can't have this world where, well, we can't complain anymore because, you know, we you and I and Raj, we know that we are, as far as, you know, the supporter hierarchy goes, we are pretty high at the top and we have things pretty good. We understand that. But it's okay to moan, Jack. Moan away.
Okay, well, because we can kind of tie this in. Let's go to some of the questions, because, you know, we don't want to cover the sort of questions through our natural moany discussion. And I feel this is a good point on Man United at the moment. Raf Harris, at Raf _, well, the last letter of Raf is H and the first letter of Harris is H. So what he's done is put Rap Harris, because
quite clever.
Yeah, he's done that. And then there's an _ at the end. But he says, although Poch really likes Wanyama, isn't the Dier Dembele partnership better? Now this is something I've noted on Twitter and sort of a few of the other pods and stuff, that I almost feel that Wanyama's been scapegoated a little bit at the moment. And I don't feel that it's entirely fair. I think there seems to be this sort of general accepted line. Well, there's two kind of schools of thought that are at play here. Number one, that Wanyama isn't at all a progressive footballer, that he's never taking the ball forwards and he's not looking to play it forwards, which, number one, I think is false.
I agree. I think that's false.
And number two, that Eric Dier is Xavi Alonso. That I have a lot of time for Eric Dier. I think he's a very, very talented player. But this idea that he's going to come in and provide this all-action dynamism to the midfield, I think, again, is false.
Yep. I also don't think Dembele is currently playing very well.
No, this is it for me. If anything, I would like to see Wanyama and Dier play together. I think Dembele should be dropped. I don't know.
He just hasn't got going. He just doesn't. I thought he was extremely poor against Manchester United.
He's been extremely poor for most of the season, mate. I know he's not been fit.
Yeah, he hasn't been right. And I just think we do have huge issues in that part of the field. And I think also, I mean, I know we've had Alderweireld out and we've had to reshuffle the defence a little bit. But I also think that some of those problems could have been solved had the midfield done a better job of protecting that back four. And they just, I don't know what it is. I'm not a smart enough football mind to explain it, but it's the chemistry is wrong. And whether that's due to underperformance or players like, you know, Wanyama is a new player, so you have to allow for a little bit of time for you know, for existing squad members to adjust to him, but it just hasn't been right. And I think it's a sort of a confluence of factors. Personnel, definitely. Chemistry, yes. Also, this season, I mean, in my opinion, Pochettino has changed the shape of his midfield probably a little bit more than he needs to. That is something that's possibly a little bit more evident from like a stadium seat. I'm not trying to be a snob and not trying to disenfranchise people who aren't able to get to games, but it just looks a bit different to how it did last year. The sort of we seem to be aiming for some kind of, I think Raj called it a rhombus a few weeks ago. And I think that's probably right, but the difficulty is that while we've remained hard to beat, we don't move the ball up the field in the same way, and players aren't kind of reliably in the same positions. And there have been occasions. I remember West Ham game is being kind of ignored because we ended up winning it, and so people kind of ignored the performance. But for a lot of it was chaos. I mean, it was bad. I mean, West Ham played quite well, and you know they we won that game because of just a series of defensive clusterfucks, rather than because of anything we managed to do. But it was odd. It was completely imbalanced, and you know that showed itself in the way that West Ham were able to batter to counter attack on us when we lost the ball in their half, but also in kind of the speed with which we were able to move the ball. It was very ponderous. It was kind of like it felt like a little bit of a return to Andre Villas-Boas' football, because we were shuffling the ball from side to side, and you know players weren't quite sure whether they were supposed to be carrying the ball vertically or moving it. It was odd, and it's been a little bit of a feature of recent games. It feels a bit wrong, I think. So I mean, the answer to the question, I reckon, is not necessarily, or at least a good answer, not maybe a total one, but is don't. I don't think the personnel matters that much. I think the continuity matters. So I would like to see some kind of, right, we are going with these players as our kind of primary option, and let's just build on that. And not necessarily, you know, it's not a question of, right, we're going to go Wanyama, Dembele. It's a question of Wanyama and Dembele, but Wanyama and Dembele doing these things in each game, and the players ahead of them having the same roles. And I just think that stability. If you remember at the end of last season how stable our selection was, and everyone, we all knew what each player was supposed to be doing each game, and there were injuries and suspensions, but again, the function of each position was very obvious, and I don't think we have that at the moment.
So it feels a little bit like when you're playing your whatever football manager or Pro Evo, or you know you're playing Master League, or you're playing career mode on FIFA, and you've signed kind of loads of the young players that are going to come through because you know they're going to be great, and you already have sort of a number of kind of decent attacking, it's generally always attacking midfielders,
and it's because defenders are boring,
yeah, and it's just but it's just knowing who you want to play, really, because you've got all these good players. It's almost that you don't want to sacrifice anyone, so you end up kind of shoehorning in a load of players and almost playing some out of position a bit, and as opposed to just being like, you know what, this is our startup, we need to buy an option. Because I kind of, you know, the whole always kind of like floating Ali or Ericsson out to the wing, that I don't know, it's just like, just commit to playing them centrally, you know, that's where they're most effective, where they kind of exercise the most influence. I know there is an argument for Ericsson coming in off the left, but I just don't buy it personally.
I think maybe part of that, again, not excusing the people that have made these decisions, but I think part of the reason why that has to happen is because our wide players aren't performing. The only one who gives a baseline performance of about, you know is going to be pretty much the same every week is Lamella, and he's obviously been missing for quite a while. Son plays well every sort of 6 weeks. Sissoko is a waste of time. And Kodo not quite ready. I mean, it's hard. And I suppose in that type of situation where you can't rely on those players, I mean, I think also you can't rely on any of those players defensively yet. because they're either naive, lazy, or just disinterested in actually defending or pressing. And so I think shifting Eriksen there or an Ali, you know what you're going to get. You know that they are at least aware of their responsibilities. Mm. Whether they carry them out or not is a different issue. But I don't know. Just it just feels messy, Jack.
He seems.
I don't. For instance, know how the team will line up tonight. I know that there was a game 3 days ago, and so that's going to factor into it, of course. But even if this game was on Saturday at 3 p.m., I don't know what I'm going to see. You know, maybe Sissoko's going to play. I mean, goodness, you don't. Maybe Ali's going to be dropped into a sort of a deeper role. I don't know.
I think you. I can't remember if you made a good point, if it was at the start of this podcast, or if it's before we were recording. But like Ari Sissoko, I mean, there is this kind of argument of like, oh, you know, stop judging him. How many times has he played for us? Blah, 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 blah. You know, if anyone can turn him into a good player, it's Pochettino. But the man's 28. He's played for the past however many years in the Premier League.
I think
he's on the verge of turning
28. I'm not sure he quite is yet. Let me just look that up. He's either 28 this season or he was 27 when he signed for us. So
he's not a developing footballer, you know?
No.
He's supposed to be an international grade footballer. He has played in the Premier League for the past few years. Like how much time and understanding does a player like that get? I mean, I've probably been quite hasty with Vincent Janssen, and I think there's much more nuanced argument there to him adapting.
But Janssen's pliable, Jack. This Pochettino can change players argument is very well. And look, he has that quality about his management. I don't think anyone would deny that. But that only works if the player is receptive. That only, you know, Mr. Soko turns 28 next August, by the way. I just don't see the point.
I mean, he was all right against United. He was all right. But
he was just better than what he replaced, I think,
It's just weird. He made these runs, which were decent, but there was just no end, like literally no end product to anything that he did. Which I don't even think is true of Andros Townsend. Like, I think at least Andros Townsend was a serviceable wing. You know, if we're talking about this, you know, he's there to stretch a defence. He's there to get at the opposition to give us a different element. And again, I know Andros Townsend's situation was slightly different because he had the Barney with Tony Jimenez or whoever it was that he had pushed, which, to be honest, probably should be a red flag for getting a player out of the club as soon as they start laying hands on
coaches. I think it was still the
right
decision to sell him. I mean,
the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, everything that Sissoko has apparently been brought to us to give us, we already had in someone like Andros Townsend. So, like, is that what we want then? We want to step back? Because I think everyone was pretty much agreed that Andros Townsend wasn't really good enough for us. So what is it? So Sissoko comes on because he can run at people and because he can stretch defence. Great, but
I don't see what he... I understand Nathan the Redmond, argument in theory, you know? But I don't... Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, I would have sooner paid that money for Wilf Zaha.
Definitely.
And I don't really like Wilf Zaha. I
actually really do quite like Wilf Zaha. He's tearing it up at the moment.
But also, he's playing very well. But also, I think the main point is that if you're going to spend 30, if you had to spend 30 million quid on one of those two players, you'd always go with the younger one. Because at least you can say, okay, Zaha, there are a lot of stories about Zaha. And, you know, he was at least complicit in his inability to make the grade at Manchester United. But at least you say, with a younger footballer, you sit him down and say, look, well, what do you want your career to be? You could be this, or you could just be what you are. With Sissoko, if you have that conversation with him, you say, well, do you want to be this? Like, yes, mate, I'm a French international. I earned this, and I've earned this already in my career. And if all else fails and you don't want me here, fuck it, I'll go back to PSG, but I'll go to PSG, who will obviously pay for me. You know, because that is just the way it works. I think most of us, I've never seen such an overwhelmingly negative response to a Tottenham signing.
I'd like to be offered 50 mil from a Chinese team.
You know what? Like, even if someone offers 20, I know this is Son part two. I would honestly, if someone was interested in him in January, I'd get rid of him already, because I don't care. He does not have 4 years to develop, because he is in his athletic prime now. If he's not going to be good now, he's not going to get better when he turns 30.
I know people kind of again make this argument, his price tag's playing against him, but you know, and lump it in with the same thing as Lamella, but I don't think the situations are comparable. Like, okay, his price tag may act against him to a degree, but at the same time, that's because, to coin one of your phrases, we've paid for that off-the-peg player, right, in this instance with Sissoko, and we're paying that money for a player of his age with his Premier League proven experience, whether people choose to agree that school of thought or not. That's what we've paid for. And the fact that he's now having to readjust and he's like not walking into the first team is just, it just makes me question, why the fuck have we bought him then?
It's also 4 months. I mean, it's not September anymore and it's not October. We're nearly in 2017. He was signed in August, and I understand
that he hasn't had a pre-season. Fuck off.
Hasn't had a pre-season because, and this is another red flag, he hasn't had a pre-season because his attitude towards the end of his Newcastle career was so poor that they didn't want him involved in a pre-season. I mean, you know, and that's kind of damning.
Mate, we could get so many pelters for how negative this fucking pod's been.
I don't, mate, that's fine. But Sissoko's fee worked against him, but Sissoko's fee works against him in the sense that it's a club record transfer, but it's also something that could have been spent on somebody else. You brought up Lamella, and it's a good argument, but then there's the difference between those two beyond ages and beyond skill sets and, you know, being ultimately very different kinds of players, is that one was content to reshape himself into a useful component. The other, is there any sign at all of an improvement in Sissoko? I'm not expecting him to be a starter. I mean, because he is new and he does, like everybody else, he has to learn what Pochettino wants and he has to learn the physical requirements. That's fine. But is there any sign of any kind of progress at all? I mean, he's going to play brilliantly against Hull, isn't he?
Yeah, but I don't want to spend 30 million on a player
that can play
against Hull.
That's it. That's just like, well, we've got Son. We don't need another one that does that. You know, and we don't need a player that is really, really good against shit teams or underperforming sides. We need players that for that kind of money, you need players that help us in the bigger games. Lamella, whatever you think of his transfer fee, is absolutely invaluable against those bigger teams. And it has always been. Let's move on, mate. My morale is a kind of a single digit percentage. So let's talk about something good.
What would you like for Christmas, sir?
No, mate, I don't. I'm not ready for that one either.
Why not?
Don't
you fucking Grinch.
You know, I'm looking forward to sort of the days of no football for Christmas.
What, death?
Well, no, not death. I'm not there yet, but I just feel very low about it. That's all. Although we should beat Hull and we should beat Burnley, and you know, yay, brilliant.
Like I say, mate, it's readjustment. It'll be good when we, you know, we'll beat Chelsea at White Hart Lane.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We will. We'll beat them.
Yeah, maybe.
Mark my words.
Maybe. Okay.
We'll embarrass Conte, and I hope Pochettino takes his wig off and wipes his arse with it on the touchline, throws it back in his face. I cannot stop looking at the wig now. Now that I know it's a wig,
Did you not know?
No, since my mind's eye, because I'd forgotten that he was totally bald when he was playing as well.
Look at his hair when he scored quite a famous goal against Man United in the season when they won the treble.
Mm.
He scored in the first leg of the semi-final for Juventus. Look at his hair then, look at it now. Miracle growth.
But it's such a poor wig, though, as well. It's terrible.
I've seen worse, mate. I have to say, I mean, compared to, like, Jimmy White's wig, I think it's better. Bobby Mihailov, I can't remember his name, the Bulgarian goalkeeper, who played in England for a little bit.
Terry Wogan's wig was quite good.
Yeah, pretty convincing. Bruce Forsyth, good wig. You know, there are worse wigs.
Conte's is more on the Donald Trump scale of wigs, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, is it? I don't really know the difference between wig and hair transplant. Because obviously, Christian Eriksen's hair transplant, good job.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, like Klopp as well. But that's, you know, pretty convincing. You know, there's nothing, I mean, it's not Rooney's. I mean, that is, I mean, I think he looked better without hair. Personally, but
Wayne Rooney's so bald that he's starting to bald from his hair transplant again, though, isn't he?
I think that started to happen to him when he was like 22. So I got sympathy there.
I think it's easy for me to say because I have
a luscious
thick
hair,
and
mate.
Fulsome
you do
head
you
of
do.
Hair, but some guys I just think they just need to own baldness. I mean, like for all his flaws. Pep Guardiola, he owns his baldness.
Handsome man.
He's fucking sexy, you know, and he owns it. Yeah, he owns his slap head.
I think I'm going pretty thin on top now, and I reckon I walk past men occasionally in the street. I was in a department store about 6 months ago, and you know when you're on an escalator and you've got people that are sort of a few stairs down from you, and you can, you know, there was a guy there who I'd encountered on the top floor, and I thought, you're wearing a wig. And then he was on the escalator at the same time. No, I just happened to be on the escalator at the same time. And I could actually, when I looked down on him, I could see the clip on top of his head.
Oh, good God.
And I just thought, mate, it's just hair. Shave it off. Honestly, because just shave it off. Because I think a hair transplant is kind of, I don't know, unless it's in a very young person. I think it's a painful exhibition of vanity. I mean, given how much they supposedly cost and stuff, I'm not sure that's certainly don't wear a wig with a clip, whatever you do.
Does this constitute some form of hate speech nowadays? So like this kind of anti-bald agenda?
Is there going to be like a Guardian article about me saying these things?
We need to talk about, you know,
Seb Stafford-Law's opinions on hair follicles. Yeah. The privately educated Stafford Blore, you know, that kind of stuff. That's how it will start, I imagine.
Should do, though, really. You know, that's
good to see also Ian Brady given a chance to voice his opinions on Brexit yesterday. That was excellent. You know,
that was a metro, wasn't it? Quite bizarre. Though.
Yeah, also had some pejorative opinions about public school, you know, because fair enough, Ian Brady, that is really where the real evil in this world lies, public school, not in, you know, killing fucking children. Jesus. Uplifting pod.
Oh, mate, I know. What's going on?
How is Ian Brady still alive? Like, how is that?
Are you going full Bring Back the Death Penalty, Seb?
No, not at all. I just like, I just remember this guy. I remember 20 years ago, he was intent on starving himself to death.
We should probably pick this one up a bit, mate. We're on Ian Brady now.
Okay, you're on Ian Brady.
We're talking about Tottenham's patchy form, and we've moved on to Brady.
Yeah, okay.
Anyone else? Harold Shipman, Fred and Rose West. Do you want to...
Anything to say? No, I don't have anything to say about them.
Apparently Rose West is... she wanted to release a cookbook last year, and understandably the courts said she couldn't.
Good. I think that would be terrible. I mean, that would just be profiting off. I mean, I don't know whoever thought that could. I don't have words for that, mate. That one.
Read a book about Rose West. It's pretty scary stuff they did.
Yeah, mate.
It's pretty awful.
Frightening. Pretty just a different level of evil. That it's not. I think we need to talk about something else. We have plummeted. Raj would be right. This is where Raj would be extremely useful because he'd be, you know what he'd be saying right now. Just, you know, back on topic, you know, something old cunt, you know, that kind of stuff, and that would be very. So have you seen anything good in the cinema, Jack?
I have. I saw an advanced preview of a film called Lion the other evening.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. It was a kind of Indian stroke Australian production about a child in India that gets lost. He essentially gets locked on a train, on a long distance train, drives him across the country. It's based on a true story. Drives him across the country, and he gets dumped out in the middle of nowhere. He's only about 3-4 years old, and obviously just gets taken for whatever, a street dweller, and ends up, you know, being adopted by an Australian
Lions.
Family.
Oh.
Through, you know, via an orphanage, so on and so forth. Ends up getting adopted by an Australian family, and then cut to 20 years later when he's kind of, you know, for all intents and purposes, a young Australian guy now with very little link or understanding of his, you know, Indian backstory, his heritage, and just starts to have flashbacks and remembers that pretty much what happened to him. And it's kind of about his journey, this man's journey to find his family, his lost family. And it is, yes, it's based on a true story, and it's spectacular. It's a really, really good film, and I don't even feel it's just spectacular in that kind of way. For, you know, you've kind of got your privileged Western audiences that watch films like Slumdog Millionaire and say, like, oh, wasn't it great to see, you know, what's happening over in India. It's not really so much trying to make as big a point as Slumdog Gig. It's just a very raw human story about, you'll see towards the end of the film what is obviously still quite a big issue and something that quite a few people are working towards, sort of like the homelessness of children and, you know, the kind of support networks that are provided to children in certain places and so on and so forth. But it's from top to bottom, the production of it's beautiful. Like, it looks amazing. The acting's brilliant. It's one of the best films I've seen this year, by far. So I would urge anyone to go and see it, basically. So it's called Lion, and it should be, I'm not sure when it's out. I went to an advanced screening. Just, I don't know if I'd mentioned that already. But yeah, it's good. You saw Sully, didn't you, the other day, mate?
Saw that last night with my girlfriend. Yeah. We enjoyed it. It's very well done. Obviously everyone knows the story, and, but it's not sort of, if you're going there expecting a kind of 90-minute portrayal of the actual thing, the actual event, then it's not really the film for you. It's about kind of all the stuff that happened to him afterwards, and the sort of the, obviously, it's quite rare for an air crash to happen and for a pilot to, and his co-pilot to then be questioned about it and their actions and you know, which decisions they took at which critical moments. It's very interesting because it's actually, it's basically built around a conflict between the Americans investigative board. Jesus, it's quite early and I haven't had any coffee. And the pilot Sully, who you know, is obviously saying, well, you know, no one's ever trained for this kind of scenario, and, you know, no one ever plans to ditch in the sea, and, you know, I lost both my engines at a lower height than any pilot in history. And the conflict is based on the board who keep running simulations which show that he could have safely landed at this airport and that airport, and well, why didn't you just do this? And I want to be careful to kind of not to ruin any of it for anybody, but it's yeah, very compelling. It's not sort of heavy cinema, it's not going to make you think, but it's you know, it takes you sort of inside the anatomy of what actually happened, and it's yeah, you'll leave having had a, you know, good 90 minutes.
I don't really like flying as it is, then, mate. So I, you know.
No, but it's one of his films. If you were to fly, you want that guy as your pilot, I reckon.
Mm.
I mean, he's a pretty talented guy. I mean, because actually, I mean, Jen and I were talking on our way back from it about the sort of, if you're going to land on water, I'd imagine it's kind of like, you know, the re-entry procedure when you're coming back from space, when one is not, you know, when like you and I do it every other week, you know, but sort of if you get it sort of a degree wrong in either direction, either too shallow or too steep, you know, you obviously skip off the Earth's surface or disintegrate. And I imagine water is much the same thing. If you fuck that at that kind of speed, you're either plummeting into the Hudson River or you're skipping off into downtown Manhattan, both of which neither, and, you know, are pretty disastrous. So it's an amazing thing that he did. No, I recommend it. So very solid 7 out of 10 film.
Good. Sally, I'm genuinely going to go and watch Bleed for this in about 10 minutes time. So
that's boxing, isn't it?
Yeah, that is boxing, mate. You know what you're gonna get, don't you? He's punching.
Yeah. Villain, you know,
someone will win. You know, Based on a true story again, though, isn't it? It's the, I can't remember his name, the boxer that was paralyzed, wasn't he, in a car crash, and it's about him fighting, coming in,
yeah, back to something like that.
Fight, punch someone else.
Yeah.
Angry. I think you must have to have a lot of anger.
You haven't had a good few weeks at work, so I think that is the perfect film choice for you.
Maybe, yeah.
There's some sort of, with its redemptive properties and the kind of, you know, the violence. Violence is always kind of cathartic in boxing films, so.
I quite fancy watching something like action, just something bollocky, like a Jack Reacher film or a Bourne film, you know, something that you can just sit and watch.
People something with an excellent soundtrack and a lot of gratuitous violence.
Yeah, just a load of bollocks. Yeah. But yeah, I'm sorry, everyone, if you felt this podcast was a bit negative today. It probably was. But, you know, send us an abusive tweet or something and get over yourself. You can send those abusive tweets to @RTR_pod. You can listen to all the previous episodes of Rule the Roost on Acast or on iTunes. You can also download them, I think, or listen to them on the embedded player on the website at www.rtrpod.com. The future's not bright and the future's not lily white. Just accept the fact that forever and ever, we are going to be nothing. And after we've been nothing, we are just oblivion.
It's okay, because everyone stopped listening by this point. It's all right. They've all gone off for a cry.
Bye.
Apparently Rose West wanted to release a cookbook.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.